direct from the web, it's Billy Masters Live.
Oh, live.
And now, please welcome your host, Billy Masters.
Oh, just pouring myself a refreshing drink. Just a beverage. Oh, hello, everyone. Welcome to Billy Masters Live. I am, of course, Billy Masters. Thank you, Monica. And, you know, they're getting a little bit too quick with this Chiron crap. Anyway, today is Thursday, May 27th. We're going into Memorial Day weekend. How are you all? We are on the cusp, yes, the cusp of Gay Pride Month. And, now, I don't know. I haven't made a final decision because there are a couple of things in the air. But last month for Gay Pride Month, we only had gay people on the show. You know, so when that Lonnie Anderson wanted to come on, I said, we will see you in July, which is better than see you next Tuesday, which I'm sure she's also heard. Lonnie was great. And you know that, Ed Asner, unless you can prove to me at least three gay partners, gotta wait till July. So I don't know. We might do all gay people. I might throw in a straight person. Maybe somebody who's experimented a little bit. Who knows? But today we've got a fabulous show because it's a little bit of both types of shows. We've got a guest who I really am dying to speak to because I've been wanting to talk to him for like 2 months. And we've been talking online, and so it finally all worked out. But he's also going to be part of our panel. So we've got a guest and a panel and a change. Ronnie Kroll, you know, those models, you know, he got a last minute gig. You know, that's what they're calling it in the biz, gig. I call it outcall, but gig is fine. And so he cannot be with us today, but we've got our first young one is going to be returning. The fabulous Johnny Beauchamp is going to be here in the young one slot. And, you know, he can fill my slot any day. But first, we've got one of my favorite people because I met him. Daniel, I'm trying to think about this. I think it was a Golden Globes party? Was it the HBO Golden Globes party? I think I was with my good friend Jeffrey Epstein, who's a mutual friend. And he knew Daniel, although he hadn't seen you in like 10 years. And I had never met you, but I was such a fan of you from Dreamgirls. We were laughing backstage. From Mean Girls, of course, you will remember him from Mean Girls. And, of course, from Showtime's Looking, which, you know, so fabulous. And he's also a rapper, which we will talk about because I'm not so convinced about this rapping crap. And a fabulous comedian, a huge gay activist, and just an all-around good guy, Daniel Francis. Come here, hold on. Hi, honey. Oh, wait, now I'm not hearing you. Oh, wait, now I hear you. I hear you. There was a little lag, Daniel. How are you?
A little lag. There's always a lag. I'm good. I had a little lag. No, I'm great.
Yeah, I know. Are you in Fort Lauderdale still?
I am. I am in Fort Lauderdale for sure.
I was just there last week. I have a place down. Where are you in Lauderdale?
I am in West Broward.
Okay. I'm behind the Galleria on the Intercoastal. Okay. So,
I was living on Las Olas for a while, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. Now, is that going to be your... I know, aren't you from Fort Lauderdale?
My family, we're Italian from Brooklyn, and we moved here when I was a kid to Fort Lauderdale.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is that your base?
I guess, yeah, hometown for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't know. Like my apartment's
I live in LA.
Right. Me too.
Yeah. But
do you keep your place in Lauderdale, or is it your family's place?
My mom is actually going through a double hip surgery, so I'm helping her through going through that. We're one hip down, one hip to go. So.
Well, you know, the gay sons are the ones you can count on.
The gays and the grays, that's what's over here in Fort Lauderdale. You know what I mean?
And there's a lot of gay grays.
barometric pressure, you know, doesn't hurt you so much. You know.
No, not in Lauderdale. I came back to Boston at the beginning of the pandemic just in case my parents needed me. Happily, they didn't, so I just have been here. But I've got a place in Lauderdale and L.A. Have you been back to L.A. since the pandemic?
Yes, I was. Yes, I came here. I've been here this year, just this year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I'm going to, and I'll be back in L.A.
Okay. You and I know, I've already talked to you about this backstage, but this story tickles me. I have to say, because you did a really great post. You were hired to host a pageant in the middle of the pandemic at a Catholic university, Walsh University?
Yeah.
Okay. You were hired as a comedian, but it was a scripted role. You could
right,
like...
So- A lot of times, not only as a comedian, but I get hired as an MC. Like, I'll host, like, their orientation. Sure. Or I'll, like...
Oh, host, really?
You know, like, their graduation. Or give an award to someone. You know, I'm also known as, like, an MC.
Right.
Right.
And it was the Mr. Walsh pageant. It was a beauty pageant for men, for male students.
Yeah,
at a Catholic university.
Kind of like an honor roll kind of pageant. Yeah, like a superlative pageant.
So it sounds gay just from the get-go.
Right. So I'm in.
Right. But you're scripted, and they're very careful. They want a certain tone.
Now, I've done this many times before, I should say. Like, this isn't my first time at the pageant circuit.
Oh, at this school, though?
Well, no, not at this school, but at many other schools, I would say, like, over 10. I've hosted and I'm not just my stand up like over 100, but like when we're talking about like MCs for a pageant specifically, probably I've done like 10 pageants. Like where it's
wow, I didn't even know. Frank, we got to get our agents on the pageant circuit. Why aren't we working? You can't give it all to Daniel. Although if they didn't want you, they're not going to want me.
It's usually, if it's not me, it's usually Shandla.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Shangela gets all of our gigs. So, but I want, so again, you got a script, you had a contract, everything's set. The Vatican makes the announcement that we are not blessing gay unions, but they go out of their way to be inclusive to gay people in the Vatican statement. And yet they said we don't want to shun gay people, but we're not blessing unions. What happened the very next day?
Within hours, I got an email saying that, it was like that day, like I got, you know, just saying like, or the day after, basically the morning after, saying like, sorry, but we're no longer going to accept your contract. It obviously is the opinions of somebody in the higher up or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I got fired, basically.
And what I loved is in the letter, which you read online, the person who fired you said, I know this is unprofessional.
Yeah.
What really got me.
Well, here's the thing about this. Okay. First of all, I don't even care about being fired anymore. Well, it turned into a bigger story because all the students and the alumni and the faculty and former faculty all started writing me letters talking about the toxic environment for homosexual people at Walsh University. And that this was like a crypt door that was opened with my firing or whatever. My firing was irrelevant. They came up with an excuse saying that I was too vulgar. And they cited a couple of my podcast titles, which are actually from my podcast, Yas Jesus, which is a faith-based podcast, even though it's a comedic one. Like, you know, we're irreverent about it, but still.
Sure.
You're respectful. They said that it doesn't align with their values, and that was the true reason of my firing. But I had been hired for over a month. But then all of a sudden, I get this influx of letters, and like, what am I supposed to do? So I was like, I asked them, what am I supposed to do with all these letters from your students and your faculty and your alumni that are all saying that they're mistreated and showing me examples? So they had a huge meeting, student council. They put a proposal up to have a club. They're still not allowed to organize and have a club. They were told that they would get an answer.
There's no gay alliance there on the campus.
Not allowed. No, for 15 years they've been trying to get a gay alliance going in this place.
Wow. You know, again, I feel so silly because being in LA and, also being in Boston, we're on the coast, and I forget that there are places that are still fighting a fight that I thought we fought 20 years ago.
You know, it's horrible because I like almost like one of my top college choices was going to be Liberty University because it was a religious institution. I'm a queer person who wanted to be further my religious understanding and knowledge, and that is
Sure.
one of the worst schools to go to if you're a gay person. Like they don't
Well,
even
they have
like
no money anymore. They've paid Jerry
well,
Falwell everything.
but I'm saying like, you know, that could have been me. So I always think about the young person. It's not really about me and my firing. It's really about like if this is how you're treating somebody who's a quote unquote like celebrity guest at your university that you're in a contract with, how are you treating the student there, you know? And what I'm really worried
Right.
about, I'm not even talking about them being allowed to like put a pride flag on their dorm door. I'm talking about what if like two students are in a relationship and there's some sort of domestic violence issue, as often happens in like, you know,
Right.
volatile times in colleges and things, you know? And one of them can't reveal it that they're being abused because if they could lose all their credit or be expelled from the school or worse, be forced into a conversion therapy program while in order to keep their credits. Like that's just like I mean it just people don't know what goes on inside those private institutions because but I don't even know if their donors do.
Is that a school or in that kind of situation, is gay bashing prevalent? Are people able to walk with their boyfriend hand in hand? Is there
No.
suicide situations like?
The suicide is at an all-time high rate for LGBTQ people that are in a Christian or a Catholic institution that is
Really?
non-accepting and don't have a program like that. It's staggering rates, and like that's one of the problems. REAP is a great organization that has more statistics if anyone's actually curious of the numbers. Like, I don't actually have that right now in my head, but what I do know is I have the stories of these kids, these actual people who have felt really marginalized and haven't been able to be in a place in the past, had themselves called, you know, faggot because they had a pride flag in their window or, you know, and are in a hostile environment and don't have a place that
Yeah.
they can just go and speak. You know, I was actually like listening in on the student government meeting. One of the students gave me the code and I was
Oh.
on it and it was like 3 hours long and it was riveting. And at one point people got on there and were like, faggot, 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 faggot. And, you know, I know kids are always going to mess around and Zoom bomb and do kinds of crazy things like that. But those are the reasons why they need a private space to be able to just speak in a place that they can feel comfortable. And I saw a lot of amazing things happen. The students there are wonderful. The president of the Black Student Union was like, you could have our space. Like, you know, we'll just make it the minority student union and you can like share whatever you want. And he's like, you don't even have to be there. You can have the place to yourself. Like, the
Wow.
students felt really supportive, but they got together and an unprecedented amount of students like voted on this and wanted to make it happen, but it got shot down by student, about the president who is a staunch anti-queer person.
And I'm assuming that if you had a problem or went to counseling there, you could be thrown out, you could be thrown into conversion therapy, you could be shamed, you could be, your
That might
parents
not
could be
happen.
called.
They claim to be a loving place, and I don't want to say that that could happen, but
Okay.
the problem is that it doesn't state what's going to happen, so it's unknown. And
Right.
that, you know, and as I explained gently, I thought to in my second video to the president of the school, like uncertainty, unclarity is death to a queer person. Like,
Right.
if you don't want gay people at your school, that's fine, but just say no gay people allowed, so we don't go. Like, don't make us go. And you know, they put so much money into tuition there, and they're all the school producers are educators and health therapist professionals
Oh,
and you
really?
know so you're produ and nurses and you're putting people into the world that
Perpetuating that. Yeah, it's like a ripple effect. Oh, wait, we lost your sound.
coming
Oh,
back in
there you are.
sorry
You're back. You're
they're
back.
going to have to ultimately work with a queer person whether they like it or not so they should learn how to like coexist with one and I think that
And
that's what it is really about like
presumably there are no queer teachers, or they
Well,
can't
there
be
are, you
out.
know, they can't be out, but they or share their partner or be an example. See, that's the thing. That's the reason I wanted to go to this school. I kind of knew this school was probably going to be this way. A lot of times when I get invited to Catholic or Christian institutions, I feel like it is a person who knows who I am and just thinks it's a good idea to gently
Sure.
put me in a place where it's excuse me, my dad's calling me. to gently put me in a place to gently put me in a place where it's scripted And at least I'm like, here, you know, I was in some Utah school, like, and I'm there in a tuxedo, and I'm at this university that probably filled with a lot of Mormons, and I'm there in a university, and I'm a queer person, and I'm in a tuxedo in a position of power, awarding every, it looks good. It makes a queer person say, hey, look, there's somebody like me standing up there.
Right, even if you're not talking about it, just by
That's
virtue of the
it,
fact that you were hired.
existing. Right, just
Right.
being there, just being existing. So I knew that if there was a problem with that, and believe me, like I do, you know, can make a dirty joke or whatever, but I'm as Disney as the rest of them. Like honestly, I could be like,
Right.
I trust me, I could like entertain preschoolers in the middle of Walt Disney World, like for hours, and like and feel
Right. Well,
fulfilled as an
again, you're an
artist.
entertainer. You're not hired as a
Exactly.
gay person. You're hired as an entertainer.
And it would never cross
You
the
know, I
line or do
think that
anything that
I
would be disrespectful.
against, yeah, well, and I always, you know, Frank and I have talked about this, and we've talked with many of the pioneer comedians, the funny gay males, the Judy Golds, et cetera, that when a bunch of us started, I'm a little older than you, that it was all you were a gay comedian. And we're like, well, why just can't we be a comedian? And, you know, I understood that in terms of visibility, it was important and they had gay comedy nights, but eventually we all either you were funny or you weren't. Because I am not a believer that gay is good. Good is good. And if you're funny, I don't care who you are.
You know, people's identities have a lot to do with it when that's what their comedy's about. You know what I mean? Like we could say, like, let's not look
Sure.
at Margaret Cho as a bisexual Korean American, and then you go see her show, and that's what it's about, right? So it's like that's I do feel that is part of my persona and part of my art, but I'm not like blatantly
Right.
up there. I'm not making like really. I don't honestly. My show's PG-13. I play colleges,
Right.
and I mean I played Texas Christian. I've played places where it's very conservative. With excellent reviews. So it's like, you know, that's why I'm
Margaret
hired.
Cho can play anywhere. She's funny.
Yeah, like exactly. If you know what I mean. And it's all intention, you know, at the end of the day, too, like what your intentions are. And I don't think that their intentions are good for queer people at their school.
Right. Now, were you, did you have a deposit with them?
No, when it comes to them, that was it. It just was it, you know. And that was another
That's
thing,
it.
too, because, you know, I didn't want to mention it,
Yeah.
but like, you know, the, like, I first of all, I took a pay cut because when I knew it was a pandemic, and I know that people are struggling with budgets, and I know that it's I know it's a private school. I often take pay cuts for private schools and community colleges. Some people who are at not to be like, oh, but some people who are at my level, even on the college circuit, wouldn't go do an $100,000
Of course, right.
event. But I will go do something like that if if it's the school's LGBT group. Right, or
And
if
if
I'm
it's not going to cost you anything, that's my big
exactly
thing.
like you know, I do things for my community. I do things for young people all the time that are at a discounted rate. So this school was a situation like that for me. But when I did that, I
Right.
said, you know what, this will be good for. This will be good for paying for my mom to get like a little hotel room while she was going through her
Of
operation,
course.
and I could set her up someplace nice and swank for the month and make her feel like she can go through. So they hit me in a couple of places when they did that to me. Do you know what I'm saying? Like. It
Well,
wasn't
and there's
like
so few gigs, that was it probably at that time.
with a week's notice, yeah. Like that was a
Yeah.
busy weekend. I could have made
Well,
more running
that's the
doing a
other thing.
club in
Yep.
another state that weekend. But I had they had
Right.
booked me on that weekend for 2 months almost. It was over a
Right.
month. Like and you know every like weekly emails with my manager and phone calls talking about the event, discussing what it's going to be, blah blah blah. And I got to sign up on all this shit. That I mean, honestly, like sometimes I go, okay, yeah, I know I walk into these things, and a lot of times, I mean, I don't know how it goes at this school, but a lot of times, some of the schools, I know what's going on more than they do. I go,
Oh,
here's what's going to
sure.
happen. All right, listen, these kids will come
Right.
out first. Sometimes it's kids that are running the
No,
event.
because they never know. Right.
You know, like, I'm like, this is how we're doing the show, baby. Listen to daddy. You're going to go over here.
Well,
You
right.
stand
No,
there. Like,
and you know, it's like they do one show a year, and we do like one show a
three a
week. So it's
week.
like,
Yeah, I know.
okay,
Yeah, it's
let me
crazy.
tell you who's running sound, who's running lights. This is what I need, you know. And the other thing, you brought up a really good point, is a lot of us, we do benefits. We'll do Pride festivals at a discounted rate. rate. We'll do AIDS benefits. We'll do HRC, whatever. And if something gets canceled, not only were we doing this event for free for maybe a little exposure, but you also turned down other bookings. And that's something people really should be considerate of.
Yeah, more so to me, like, you could call me and you could ask me to do orientation. You can call and ask me to do my show. You can call and do ask me to do an MC. They may vary in price a little bit what you want me to do. But I'll show up. Like, you need me, I'm there to do what your needs are as a performer and an entertainer. Like, if you're like, do 15 minutes and then walk around and shake everyone's hand in the crowd, that's my job. So I'm literally
And when you put it on your schedule, it's a commitment. It's not like, if I get a better gig, you don't do that. Exactly. I have had people who have said, I got a better paying gig. And I'm like, well, but you had a commitment. I mean, I don't want to make somebody miss out on money, but, you know, anyway. All right. So, but speaking of being versatile, let's talk about this song and the rapping and you and Tom Goss. What is that all about?
So I like to write lyrics. I co-wrote Jersey Shore as a little freaking rock opera at the New York Fringe Festival in 2011, and
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I wrote a bunch of, I've written, you know, a bunch of parodies and songs. I used to be in a band. I like that. It's definitely a side of me is musical. I was a musical theater major in college, like full scholarship. Like, that's what I went to school for. So, like, you know, when I even sing Mean Girls for a second. But when it comes to that stuff, I'm very musical. I like to try to, like, always infuse that kind of stuff. So I even put out in a Christmas rap album one year, like a whole album. But to me, it's just like kind of fun stuff. So I know I like to write lyrics and rhymes and things like that. And when I heard this, I was really inspired. I thought it was so up my alley. I love video games. I love, you know, I am a nerdy bear. So it's literally like I was stoked by it. And I was like, hey, you should let me do a remix. And Tom's just so cool. He was like, okay. And I had no idea that, like, you know, he was going to get Markaholic, who's amazing, to do the remix, and Mike Serato, who we've worked with all together before, who's a great friend and an amazing visionary, I think, and all of us to get together to do this and make a video like that. I mean, how fun. Who would say no to being a video game and getting turned into, like, an Adventure Time character?
No, I think it's so cool. And I'm reading it, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is just, like, so out there. But I didn't realize it was really part of who you are, so it's not that foreign.
Somebody used the term turned rapper, and I didn't turn into anything. I'm not, like, a freaking vampire. Like, I happen to rap. Like, I'm not, like, making a career pivot. It was just, like, a fun thing to do, and it's such a bop, and I love. Honestly, like, I actually love the song. I like want. It gets me going. It's like a really fun song. I can't wait until I'm at some bear beer bus somewhere and like pee town, and that song comes out on the dance floor. I'm gonna be like living my damn gay life. Trust me.
So we should tell people the song is called Nerdy Bear. Nerdy Bear, and you are part of the remix.
Right, so Tom made this really jazzy, like, kind of chill, vibey song called Nerdy Bear last summer. And I loved it so much. I listened to it all year. And then I was like, hey, I want to make a remix of it. So for this summer, since last summer's Bear Bus canceled, we decided to put out the remix. Both songs are awesome. But I really love the fact that I got to be on this with him. And it's just a bop. Like, people should check it out. It's really fun. The music video is fun. I dare you to watch it and not smile. It's just, like, so much fun.
Look, I dare people, anybody, to watch you and not smile, because you just make me laugh. And you also, you exude so much happiness and joy, and you love what you do. And I just love that, because there are a lot of people who don't. And you know that.
You know, I, like, to borrow from Marie Kondo, I just, like, spark and joy and shit. Like, I just want to, like, when, you know, I lean into Mean Girls because people get such a kick at it, you know? I was just having a conversation with a different podcast earlier this week about how, like, at, like, DragCon and those conventions and stuff, I, like, take, like, pieces of those dollar store princess crowns, like, at the end of the month that she breaks and gives to everybody, and I keep broken pieces in my pocket. So if I have to go to the bathroom, I'm like, I can't see you, but you're a queen. And I give them like a little, like, you know.
And I bet they love that.
Just, I want to make people happy. Like, I was such a fan. Movies and TV and theater was like my safe space growing up. Culture. It was like my connection to being queer. It wasn't sexualized, but I don't know why I love Bette Midler. I don't know why we love Cher. Why? Why do we love these people?
Larger than life.
It just happens, like, you know what I mean? That we like these queer... Even Madam, I like the puppet. I was, like, drawn to it.
I love Madam.
But my point is, like, who knows? Like, Phyllis Diller, all these icons. Why do I like these people? Why is Bea Arthur cool to me? I'm Golden Girls and I'm a 12-year-old boy. I don't know why you like... I like these things, but I did, you know? It's it's just fun.
You know, I will say that I had a friend when I was a little bitty gay and wasn't really even out. And I was, I don't know, like 15 or something. And he said, "You've never seen Bette Midler in concert," and started showing me Divine Madness, or you had never seen the Ritz, and made me watch, like, gave me this gay education. I'm like, oh my God, these are my people. So, you know, there is a shared sensibility that we have.
I do think that, like, the musicals and all of that pop culture was a way to be gay with, and experience my queerness without sexuality being involved, even from a time before
safely.
Even from a time before puberty hit, it was a way that I was like vibing on that kind of thing. You know, that's why I love that kind of joy making. I wrote letters to all those people. I got autographs from Bette Midler and Whoopi Goldberg. And,
oh wow!
And like Oprah and like Bea Arthur and even Jane Meadows. Like, I wrote people letters, and they, you know, yeah, I actually got an autographed picture from Ed Asner, who I heard you mention. Like, I wrote.
He was such a great guest. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, Ed Asner, I was like a kid, because, you know, that was Hollywood to us growing up.
He was on the Mary Tyler Moore Show on Nick at Night when I was in, you know, because when Nick at Night first started, I was watching all the stuff that, you know, was like, so anyway. I wrote them all letters and everything. I actually found out that Ted Knight had passed because I wrote him a fan letter and it got sent back to me.
Deceased stamp.
Yeah, literally.
Daniel. Oh, my God. You make me laugh. All right. I'm putting you backstage because I got to talk to each of them. And then we'll come back and we're going to talk about some hot topics.
Okay. Love it.
Hang back there. I love you. Thank you, Daniel. Oh, next, coming up. Oh, well, I don't even know really where you go with that. I think you have to keep the craziness going with my constant co-host, although I haven't had him on this season yet. First time back, Frank DeCaro.
Hello, darling. Okay, Daniel has lived my life just 15 years
and,
later.
I know.
Everything he said. The only thing I can add is I met Ed Asner when I was doing the radio show on Sirius XM. Uh-huh. He came into the studio, and he is one of the he is one of the sexiest men I have ever met in my life. And I was
shocked. Well, you do have a type.
No, that's not my type. My type is David Bowie. I always lusted after, David Bowie speaking German. Can they turn sideways and disappear because they're so skinny? That was always what I thought was sexy. So, I met him and I just was like, appreciate
a little hot
bears even more.
Daniel is laughing backstage. I'm watching. He's laughing.
Kavorka. Ed Asner has the Kavorka, as they say.
Well, I have to say, I had him. I mean, we talked for about 2 hours. He was a great guest. I mean, and you sit there and you also say, because you and I are students of Hollywood, and you're like, I could talk to Ed Asner for like 12 hours. There were so many credits. It was amazing.
You talked
and a lovely man.
Two hours?
Yeah, we did two shows.
Did you have a hostage situation?
I was. He was in a hostage video. And he had to hold up a newspaper and everything.
I love him. Yeah, he has it all going on. I'm telling you.
He was great. And
he said right before I croaked, the one thing I want is to rotate your tires. Let him. Okay? Just whatever he wants. If Ed Asner says, I've got 5 years to live and I'm going to bang the daylights out of you, say, knock yourself out. You know,
it's a story.
Yeah. No, he's pretty sexy. I have to say.
All right. I have to tell people, I didn't tell you this, but yesterday I was listening to your two-part interview on Judy Gold's podcast.
Oh, that was a good one. Yeah, I had a good time.
Oh, my God. It was so good. There were things because, you know, I know you. I know Judy. But, you know, when you talk to somebody who's a friend, when you're being interviewed by somebody who's a friend, you get things that you wouldn't get in a normal interview. I learned things about you. I mean, I knew about the ghost. So that I knew. And the heat and all of that. But I didn't know about, like, you were part of, you know, again, the Bowie, the Rocky Horror Story in college, all of that stuff. I didn't know any of that.
She is one of the best interviews I've ever
done. She does her research.
And it was, she listens. She's, if you want to learn how to interview somebody, watch how Judy does it, you know. And you and I are good, you know, we talk.
Yeah, of course.
But still.
We do.
You know, she's.
Yeah, but she's got that annoying bell.
Yeah, she's a pain in the ass, but that's why we love her, you know. And she'll kick you because she's so fucking tall, you know. I mean, she'll hurt you, so you have to behave. But I love her. I adore her so much. You know, they had me, the Comedy Center in Jamestown, New York, had me host the interview when her book came out.
Oh, yeah. It's and such
so
a great
I did
book.
The podcast with her, and that led to, I did it with Deborah Messing. So it was a swell time.
How was she?
During pandemic. I had a good time with both of them. I really did.
Yeah, really.
You know me. I like to talk to everybody.
No, you do.
I really do. And you can always find common ground. The only thing is, now I'm getting older. I've been telling people for days now that I was going to do Billy Porter's podcast. And
Thank you.
And so don't tell anyone.
No, I'll just go to the tanning salon. It's fine.
No one will notice. If you say nothing, no one will know.
I should be so lucky to be confused with Billy Porter. Let me just tell you. Nobody wears an umpire waist like Billy Porter.
Well, I'd have to wear it as a turtleneck, or there is no, you know, where am I going to put it? So, okay. I am the only
I hear you have news.
I have lost 32 pounds, and I'm from COVID. During
all right,
COVID,
good.
And I'm still in the red. Okay. I gained 50 pounds last year.
Now, when you lost all the weight, how much did you lose? Like 75?
I lost 107. And then I decided to watch it creep back up. And then during COVID, it became a festival of
eating
bread cake and Mexican lasagna. And
the pictures you would post of those desserts. Oh, my God. In merciful heaven. They were so good.
Here at Shea Plump. We ate ourselves into oblivion. Me, my freaking husband, he goes, oh, I've gained weight. He gained like 6 pounds. Okay. It's like,
you know,
50.
Don't
who gains 50 pounds in a year? Who? Me. That's who. Me. Wow. I do.
So what are you doing now? Are you doing what you did the first time with the Lose It app?
And I'm logging all my meals and it good. Worked. But you're like, it's infuriating because my alarm bells don't go off until it's almost all home, you know,
just really
all the weight is coming. It's never, oh geez, like because people who don't have food issues, they don't even get on a scale. They put on their pants like, oh, these are tight, and then they watch their weight for a couple weeks,
right?
They,
of course,
the rest of us are like, well, I have to buy new pants, you know, and then that's when you decide that, you know, if you're up 4 inches in your waist size, you think maybe it's time, you know,
well, or during COVID. During COVID, I think for the first year, I was wearing just the elastic pants, the elastic waistbands.
Yep.
So who knew how big I was?
Well,
and who cared?
I was also going to see my husband's a sweetheart, Jim Colucci.
Yes. I love Jim. You know
girl
that.
Forever.
Yes.
Okay, I plugged it in. So he said to me, did you have fun gaining weight? And I said, yes. And he said, then don't worry about it. Just lose it now. And I was like, okay. He said, don't
and
be
did
so
you,
isn't that sweet? So,
did you have more fun gaining it than you did maintaining beforehand? Like, did you feel that you were restricting?
It was a different kind of fun gaining it because, you know, I was using food as the way other people use drugs. So it's, you're kind of ashamed of it, but you're also going, this is fun, you know, but. The only thing, you know, but you can't wear any of your clothes. And I have a walk-in closet with fabulous crap in it.
I know you do.
A lot of good clothes.
But you had a lot of really fabulous fat clothes, too.
Yeah, but I got rid of all those because I said I was never going to gain it all back.
So, oh, Frank.
Yeah, I know. I did gain it all back, so that's good. But anyway,
right.
here, I'll show you. This is a picture of my favorite outfit. No, there we go.
No, I love that. That's so, not you.
Anyway, but no,
you have news to tell me. What is your news?
Yes.
I hear you have an announcement.
Yes,
an exclusive.
I went to the gym yesterday.
That's not an exclusive, Frank.
Okay. No, I have not told anyone this.
All right.
And I need some enthusiasm from you, because honestly, I told a few friends and they were like, oh. And then, you know,
all right. Like, I'm getting ready.
I'm following up my drag book, Drag Comedy Through the
Such a great book.
Thank you. You were so kind to let me promote on your show.
Loved it.
More than once. I'm going to do a pop culture history of disco and what it means to the gay
community. Oh, that's great.
And what it means to the general pop culture. And instead of it just being, here's what the in crowd did at Studio 54.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be, here's what we did at Teen Disco in New Jersey. Here's the right. Ethel Merman disco album. Here's
or Italian disco. I mean, yeah, it was around the world.
The Bee Gees lunchboxes. You know, I mean,
oh.
I really look at it as how disco was consumed by the whole country and how it was destroyed in name only, really. But how the efforts were made to
in
destroy
one
it
night.
Because it was the time when it really wasn't about white straight guys. It was about gays and lesbians and women and African Americans and other minority and Latins and, you know, and Latinx people. And the minorities were making the music. We were topping the charts at our people. And they freaked out and, you know, they tried jumping on the bandwagon and then they tried to get rid of it, you know, and it just went back underground. Even Gloria Gaynor, there's a great quote where she said the names were changed to protect the guilty. But, we ended up, it never died. And it really laid the groundwork for hip hop and electronic dance music.
Oh, of course.
And so it looked at it in that way. But it's got to be the kitchen sink approach that I did with drag. So it'll be.
Is this going to be another Rizzoli book?
It is for Rizzoli, yes. But the exciting thing to me is, you know, it'll be here are the 20 disco movies you need to see. Here's the.
Can't stop the music.
Episode of Police Woman called The Disco Killer. And here's the episode of Charlie's Angels set in the disco. And here's the Wonder Woman disco episode. And there's an Incredible Hulk disco episode, and What's Happening had a disco episode, and so it's gonna sort of be that kitchen sink approach to pop culture. And so yeah, but you're the first person I've told about it. And you know what, my old colleagues Derek and Romaine wanted me on, and I said I can't talk about it yet, and now I haven't signed the
sorry
papers
Derek
yet. But I did, but I didn't sign the papers yet, but we will. So it's fun. But
do you think anyone is listening to Derek Romaine? Are they making money?
I hope they seem to. They seem happy and have their following. Yeah,
I'm wondering. I mean, they were the, you know, one of the few people who continued as a pair after OutQ was defunct abruptly. Oh my God! When you tell the story of the woman flying out to L.A. to tell you on the anniversary. Oh my God.
Happy anniversary. You're fired. Anyway, it happens. But you know what? It ends up, I am not, look, for someone who's as nostalgic as I am about drag and show business in the early 20th century or TV in the 70s or whatever, for someone who's as nostalgic as that, I don't look backwards. I don't want to relive any part of my life. You know, I don't really want to go, but no, what the hell? I want to see what's next. I really do. Even though I want to bring it all with me, is which you can't always do, you know, as people or things, you know, there are just some people who don't want to go on the adventure with you. And unfortunately, you have to say goodbye a little bit, or at least.
From somebody who's living in his childhood home occasionally.
Occasionally. Yeah, not as much now. My friend lives there now, so it's really good. I have.
Oh, good! So you're making some money. Okay, good.
So good.
I'm so glad somebody's made. I'm always happy when people get money. Like if somebody emails me, I was talking to Daniel about this. When someone emails me and says, "I can't do your show because I got a paying gig," I'm so happy somebody got work. I really am. Nobody's been working.
But if you're of a certain age, yeah, I think you do this. You open the envelope, right? You open the envelope and you look and you're like, what year did the zero fall off? There's always, yeah, there used to be an extra zero on his check. Yeah. And now it's not there anymore. You know, it's like,
I know. Oh, good,
it's a nickel. Oh, good. I got paid. It's, you know, we can go. I can, you can't even, what are you going
to
do?
You know, you can't even go to the bank and make the deposit because you're going to spend more on the meter. I know. It's madness.
But it makes me, but you know what? You do it. And somebody said to me when I told them about the disco book that I was working on, they said, you've done it. You've reinvented yourself again. Now you're going to go from being Mr. Drag to Mr. Disco. And I was I don't know. You just kind of, you figure out what can you. I sat down. I was like, I have two major topics left that I haven't talked about at length. Disco and being Italian. And if I have my way, the book after Disco will be about being Italian. And Italian American. And it's like, and I'm sort of like, I sort of sat down. And
really, and Daniel's waving. Daniel wants to be in that book too.
He's in the drag book. So
yes, he is.
So
see, there's somebody that we didn't have on. We're going to do, we'll do a couple more drag shows this year with you because we had some great panels. I mean, it was so much fun because you knew everything about these people. And again, the other thing that we said about Daniel, you love what you do. And I think that really shows. There are people who are so smart and write great books, but they don't love it. You love what you do. And also, the thing that I had forgotten, and you said it to Judy Gold, you loved being on the road doing book signings and meeting the fans. Oh, you're
someone great. Left that someone shaved and perhaps showered to come and see you. They got in a car to come and see you, who they don't know and don't owe a goddamn thing to. And they came to see you.
And they gave a rat's ass, right. I know.
Yes, and it's like my job, all you can do, and this is what I did during the pandemic with people are like, you and those collages that you're posting.
Oh, but I love them.
They're really funny, but they're really for me. That's just, you know, I mean, that's just, I do them because they make me laugh.
How about the 20-year-old who told you you post too much?
Oh, yeah, that's my nephew. That's all right. But he's coming to stay. I'll get even. But no, he stopped following me, so it's fine. I don't have to worry about it. No, I just think my job title is mirth maker. And if I can make somebody laugh for 5 seconds, I'm good.
Absolutely.
Whether it's my own creation or I'm passing on something that makes me laugh, which I don't do quite as much of, I try to. If I see a picture that makes me laugh, I try and change it. I put a mask on it, or I
do your version of it.
Something. I try to monkey with it a little bit, but that's the least you can do. I can't go be a soldier because I'm scared shitless. I can't. You know. I mean, you can't. How are you gonna fight the second plague of our lives? Okay, so this second freaking
I'm tired of plagues.
So what am I gonna do? Well, you know, I could make people laugh, and if I could do that,
like, you would be on a USO tour, though. I could totally see you doing that.
But what Daniel was saying before, it's like our job, and it is easy because we get a lot
for us. Yeah, of course.
It's making people forget their troubles, even if it's for 5 minutes.
Or even a minute, right.
Yeah, if you can do that, you've actually done something. The great, I said this probably to Judy, and I've said it to anyone who will ever listen. A woman called during the radio show when I was on Sirius, and she said, I have not laughed since my son died of AIDS, and your voice sounds like his. So he's a big group. She said, your voice reminds me of his, and you make me laugh. And I can't tell you how much that has meant to my life. And I told her, I said, I'm speechless for the first time in my life. It's like, what do you say to that? It's like,
well, it's the power of media. It really is. You don't know who you're reaching.
I mean, I wrote a gay memoir when I was too young to really write a memoir.
Boy Named Phyllis. Boy Named Loved Phyllis. It. Great book, if you could find it.
Yeah, but it's like it's on the Literature for Change program. You go on your couch, you get the change out, and it's...
There you go. Good. All right.
Literature for Change. But if one person felt better about being a gay because of it, or being a big cis, or being, you know, being flamboyant or whatever age you are and whatever words you want to use. It's like if any of us has made one person feel better about themselves.
Absolutely.
And every person on here has, you know, has made me feel better about being me. To be in this company makes you feel better about yourself. You know,
I have made two men at a time feel better. Sometimes. That was pre-pandemic. It is a little work.
How enthusiastic are you? See, the most I would do is this. I am not, you know, I'm too sex negative for that. I'm just forgetting.
Oh, I'm very sex positive, I have to
admit. I don't even want to have sex with myself anymore.
You did say, you were very funny. You said that, that, you know, what was it after 50 that you just lost a lot of interest in it? That you're like, yeah, whatever.
Did you ever see that? There was a fake magazine cover. It was, can you be sexy over 50? And it said, the answer is no, page 48. And that made me laugh. And it's not quite as bad as that, but I do.
No, I know. But you know what the key to you and Jim? You and Jim, you have so much fun together. I've spent time with you. First off, you're both fun on your own, and you have so many common interests that I think that if you don't like the person that you're with and have fun with them, then what the hell are you doing with them? I don't care how hot they are.
We did not have one knockdown, drag-out fight in a year and a half of being in the same apartment.
Wow. And that's so the longest you've been together in maybe ever.
We don't screw around on each other, but when we tell each other, we cheat on each other. It's like when he goes out of town, I order Chinese food because he hates Chinese food. So right. It's like, I'm like, you're taking me for dumplings. And that's what we're doing. You know, so that's how I cheat on him. But we really genuinely enjoy each other and we laugh and we play a lot. There's a lot of, And you know what? My folks were like that. My mother would sit and think of things to piss my father off. And so my father was a real clean freak. He was hairy like me, you know, so he was always very like scrub, 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 you know, very like has to, nobody smelled better than my father. So anyway, my mother would go, wait, I'm going to do this to your father. And she'd go, Frank, he was Frank Sr. Frank, no matter how much you wash, you always stink just a little bit. And he'd get the hell out of here. And he'd flip out. And she would laugh. And she would, you know, she'd also, if she pour herself a drink, she'd look at me and she'd go, you know, I'm going to finish this drink and then I'm going to kick the shit out of your father. And then, you know, and she never did. But it was like she was very playful with him. And Jim and I are very much that way with each other. We really, it's sort of, what can I do to get in trouble? Now I got to hide the, you know, I shouldn't be buying crap, you know, because where would I put it? But
And you're on a diet now.
But the Amazon people come, you know, with things. And I.
What is your guilty pleasure right now?
I buy these. I buy pop figures. Like, here's Lurch.
Eating. Guilty pleasure. Eating.
Guilty. I had ice cream last night, but I had calories. I had enough calories. My guiltiest pleasure was. Something happened that. See, this is me. This is what's good about getting older. You don't know.
Good. Did I eat? Yeah. Did I not eat?
I know what I ate, but it was I was either really upset or really happy. I don't remember which. It was one of the two. It was
either
emotion. And I looked at. I had a pint of Jamocha almond fudge, which isn't even that. You know, it's not like the expensive ice cream. It's Baskin Robbins. And I looked at it, and I looked at Jim, and I said, I'm going to eat this whole pint. And I said, I have not eaten a whole pint of ice cream for years. And I said, I'm going to sit here and devour this. I'm reading the calories, like, oh, it's not even 1,000. It's like, this is amateurish. I used to do this all the time. But I ate a whole pint of Jamocha almond fudge. And it was heaven. Right. You know what? It was heaven. But it's like,
all right. Heaven.
If it were drugs, it would be like I'm in the gutter with a needle in my arm. You know, I mean, it's like, it is as bad as it gets for a food abuser sitting there going, fantastic.
Well, it's as bad as it gets if you do it every night.
Yeah, but
you're not doing it every night. Oh, Johnny Beauchamp loves this.
There's no glamour to being a food addict, I'm telling you. You know, there isn't. It's a shame. It is, you know.
Unless you're a food addict who never gains weight. I hate those people.
I do, too. They need to die. Let's
let's kill them.
You know who needs to go to one last thing. You know who needs to go?
Okay.
People who are grown up after a breakup. What the hell is that about?
What do you mean?
Like, you should. And we were talking about somebody we know was has broken up and is dating someone new, and their ex congratulated them. And I said to a mutual friend, I said, I would post on Facebook, I hope you both die in a car fire. You know,
there
I mean,
you
that's
go.
What you're supposed to say. To me, you know, you do not say. Oh,
do you
I'm so
hold
glad
on
you
to grudges?
Do I hold? When I remember, yeah. I mean, there. yeah, no, I, what is that Italian, what is it called? Italian Alzheimer's is you forget everything except who, you're mad at, you know, I think
yeah, right.
maybe that's what that is. But, there's somebody, there's no one I can't be in a room with.
Really?
Even though.
Is there anybody who can't be in a room with you?
No.
Like
no,
if you walked in a room, is there anybody who'd say, I'm out of here?
I hope.
Frank, I'm putting you backstage on that
I
note.
So.
I'm putting you backstage. We'll have you back on in a few minutes. Bye, sweetheart. And of course, last but not least on our panel, on our cavalcade of stars, Johnny Beauchamp. Hey, sweetheart.
Look
hey,
at baby.
You so pretty.
How you
oh,
doing?
Listen to your sound is so good. I think that
so
was
good.
The problem.
It was my, I need these, you know, I got my vintage headphones. For
I
you.
Love them. They're so, is that lime green?
It is chartreuse, darling.
Oh, it's chartreuse. How are you? So people should know, I texted you at like, I don't know, what, it's like 11:30. I normally am not awake until noon, but, you know, it's show day. I get up a little early. And he calls me up with this very low voice, I must say.
Which is, an you know, Bill, different for me.
And you're like, Billy, what time do you need me? I said 3. Okay, I got to wake up.
To my defense, they just announced it today, this little indie that I'm going to do.
Yeah, so tell.
It's called The Way Out, and it's being produced by this, if you guys know Barry's Bootcamp, Barry J.
I do, I know Barry.
Yeah, so he's our director and writer, and he's launching this production company called Fight or Flight Films, and I think this is going to be the first one. And it's a pretty full-on, right? So I've been kind of making that my job every day, and I've been like kind of sleeping with this thing. It's really a lot of, it's very dark, you know, a lot of
when are you
stuff.
Shooting?
So I kind of been up all night with like trying to, you know, figure this out, right? And I woke up today to a gorgeous text message from Billy being like, honey, I gotta cancel, I need you on the show, what's going on? And I was just like, oh, you know, shit, I gotta go. But that to say, I can't believe Daniel's here. Daniel, I adore you. I just think you're the shit, man. And Frank, I haven't seen you in years. We always said we were going to.
He's nodding vigorously.
Frank, I adore you. I love your book. I can't wait for Disco. We have much to talk about.
He's giving you a heart, little heart.
I love you guys. So, Billy, thank you for bringing the girls together.
Oh, no, look, this is, again, these are the fun shows for you. I mean, I love when I do the celebrity interviews with somebody big, like an Ed Asner. But I also, I like, because when you did the very first panel show we did, and it got a little bit heated, but it was so interesting to me.
I got
to
tell you,
because
I loved it.
Everyone has so many different points of view, and you know, you think, oh, we're all gay, we're all like out there, we're all gonna think the same, but we don't, you know, we all have different experiences.
I gotta tell you, I got one of my heroes, you know, I got into it with one of my heroes on your show, and he said Bruce Valanche. I love Bruce Valanche. In fact, I love him more. It's like like Stockholm Syndrome. He beat me so bad, and I'm like, Bruce, when are we going out, baby? You know, like, I love him.
But don't you like somebody that you can actually go head-to-head with that doesn't back down?
Well, here's the thing I was going to say. He, you know, he said some things to me, and it gave me pause, and I left, you know, we got out of the show. It was like a Friday or something, or a Thursday.
Yeah,
and
Thursday.
I really thought about what he said, and I don't agree. But he got me to think about it, and I really thought about it deeply. And I just got to say, I mean, he's a national treasure. And when the treasures speak to or about you, you just got to listen. You know what I'm saying? Whether, you know.
Well, and again, I think that you are an up-and-coming treasure. I will never forget. I first saw you in the movie Stonewall. Yeah. It was at a screening at the Pacific Design Center. Was that the premiere?
That was the premiere, Billy.
It was the premiere. And then we had a party at, was it the Abbey? It might have been the Abbey. We walked.
Come on.
Of course. I know we walked. That's all I know. And I just remember saying, who is this kid? Because you're so magnetic on screen. And there were huge crowd scenes. And you don't really know whose story you're going to follow because there's so many people. But there is something about you that you can't take your eyes off of you when you're on screen.
You're so sweet to me, Billy. It's true. Thank you.
Because if you were a piece of crap, I'd tell you that too. You know I would.
I adore you, and I always hold a candle for you, my love. You know,
we met at Dreamgirls.
We met at Dreamgirls. We met at
the Daniel wasn't in that version of Dreamgirls.
He wasn't in that production, but they could have used him, to be honest.
Hey, oh my God, that show. Oh, I know. And we met through our mutual friend, Richard J. Alexander. And I will never forget, you were like a giddy girl when I introduced you to Cheryl Lee Ralph. I thought you were going to die. I wasn't there when you finally met Jennifer Holliday, but it was Cheryl Lee Ralph because of the glamour and the poise.
And that red dress.
Oh, she gives you everything.
Oh, I mean, she's American excellence, but she's also like Jamaican excellence.
She is Jamaican.
And if you know about like her history with the show and like, I just find... She's a woman with gumption, and everybody's going into the Michael Bennett show. They wanted a gospel song, right? So everybody's singing Wade in the Water. Everyone's singing Eyes on the Sparrow. She sang an Episcopal song, Ave Maria, like a pin, thin, small. Right.
Wanted to show the voice and the purity. Yeah.
And booked, baby.
Yeah.
And you know
And
what?
Again, she walks the walk. She really does.
She walks, she talks, she's got everything. I mean, she actually, I lived most of my life with my mother on like 66th Street, right on West End. And I guess she had like a friend or something, because one day she was on 70th between West End and Broadway, and she comes out looking like she's going to change the world. And I was walking, and I just stopped. Obviously, my jaw hit the floor, and she was frightened. I think she thought I was going to rob her. And I was just like...
No, that was Rita Moreno.
Right. No, that was Rita. So I just stopped, and I opened the door for it. There was a car there, and I just stopped, and she thought I was going to, you know, act crazy. And I just opened the door and I said, Miss Ralph. And she was so sweet. She got in the car. We took a picture. I'll show you the picture. And,
I never saw that.
I'm going to send it to you. She's a legend. She's a legend on the stage and in my heart.
She is, and I have to say, I mean, I've met them all and I know all the Dreamgirls, but there's something about Cheryl that she also, you know, again, we've talked about this. You have played these roles of people who have fought for their equality, who, I mean, pre-AIDS epidemic, but it was, you know, Frank and I were talking about that this is our second plague. Well, Stonewall was really our first fight before AIDS, and Cheryl lived through all of that, and she, you know, there are people who live through it and move on, but she wanted to move on and carry the people who we lost behind. And I think that's so beautiful about her.
Well, it says a lot about her, doesn't it?
It really does. And she's also, you know, there's always one person in a group that keeps the group together and calls, when are we all doing this? Like Cheryl is the ringleader.
I love that.
But I know that you are a little bit like that too. You really keep people close. You are a collector of people.
I am. And so when I listen to Frank, you know, or I listen to Dan, you were talking about all these people that like, I don't know personally, or all these things that really inspired you as like a young queer youth. And I'm right there with you. I mean, why we gravitate towards these personalities, the David Bowies, the Dorothy on Golden Girls, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly.
We just do. And I have such a penchant in my heart for these kinds of folks. And so, you know, we work, we're in the business, we meet people all the time, but my friends always laugh at who I geek out over. The other day we were on like on Bowery or something, and Patricia Clarkson walked by.
Oh, God,
I lost
yeah.
my mind.
What a great
I
actress.
I lost my mind. She thought I was having an aneurysm. Like, she was concerned. She looked at me like, should I call? And I said, no, I just love you. I can't. And she's like, oh, honey. And like, she was so sweet and kept walking.
And again, for such a theater geek like you, like, you've seen all of that work.
I was like walking. I was like, oh, queens, don't say anything frivolous for the next few moments. I'm having a moment. Miss Clarkson is crossing the street. And it was, It's funny who.
But she, you know, I love the fact that there are people like you who have done so much work. I loved you in Penny Dreadful. People, if you haven't seen Penny Dreadful, go. Or no, we should really mention Thirsty.
Oh,
our good
God.
Friend Miss Thirsty Burlington, the premier Cher impersonator. Frank, she's in the book, isn't she?
Who sings
Thirsty
live.
Burlington. I think Thirsty is. She sings live. She'll be in Provincetown this summer, Monday nights at the Crown and Anchor. And she's going through a cancer struggle now. And she is being so open. She's actually coming on in June. And we're going to talk about it because I knew Thirsty growing up in the club scene in Boston as a little baby drag queen who was like you, a sponge. She wanted to learn everything from the elders. She was so respectful, so respectful and so polite, but sassy. And I think that if you love what you do and you are really looking to others for inspiration, like Daniel has talked about, Frank, me, you, I think that you can't help but succeed.
You know, maybe there's something to that. I always say, you know, we got to give credit where credit is due. And
We're not reinventing the wheel. None of us.
Right. Well, when Maury Esten came to my college, I too, Daniel, went to college for musical theater. And Maury Esten came and had a talk. And he said, we were talking about Nine, obviously, right? And he said, you know, it's adaptation, but he's like, you know, you got to add interest. You got to add interest. And so he loved 8.5, right? But he said, my piece is called 9. He added like
And he
25.
Had to make it his own.
And
of
he
course.
Did. And he did. And it has gone on to, I mean, he beat Dreamgirls. I don't want to talk about it.
I know.
I don't want to talk about it. But he talked
Well,
about
I think
that.
Anita Morris in that bodysuit helped.
I mean, that
that was everything.
Do you remember that commercial? God, I saw it on, I went to the library, saw the archive commercials or whatever, because I'm a nerd.
No, you live at the Performing Arts Library. Oh,
I
love you.
It's the saddest thing, because, you know, in the pandemic, all I want to do is go watch The Life, or like go watch some, you know, Seth Coleman something.
The longest first act I have ever sat through. There was like 2 hours. I went, we got another act? Oh, my God, it was maddening. I loved every second of it.
I did, too. And they had, you know, it's something. I went to high school in Times Square, right? So, like, I used to see the working girls in, like, I guess they were kind of gone by the millennium when I really was in high school.
Yeah,
we
you missed the fun times. Yeah.
We were going to school. They were leaving work. Like, they were, like, getting off their shift. You know, we would, like, cross. And I would, you know, whether or not we smoked.
Were you ever afraid of them? Or were you just fascinated by them?
Will you say that one more time? I cut out a little bit.
Were you ever afraid of them? Like the seedy people you saw, or were you just fascinated?
Things. I was a kid and I looked and I just thought, I and she are one. I just knew we were the same. Yeah. I don't know why. Right. I saw one of the named Ruby.
Of course.
She said, "But Ruby, you got a cigarette for me?" And I would give her a cigarette because I was a bad kid and I had cigarettes.
Of course you did. All right, Johnny, I'm bringing out the whole panel. We got top topics we got to get to. Okay.
All right.
Frank, Daniel.
Yay.
Okay, hold on. I'm bringing everyone. I'm moving everyone around.
Hey, we're all here.
Hold on.
We're all here.
Okay, there you go. We're all there. All right. First, everyone. Okay. First topic.
Billy,
are you ready?
How long is this show? You only have 10 hours.
Yeah, you'll be out of here in about 20 minutes.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Okay. you know, this time next Tuesday you'll be out. Okay.
I told Jim if I'm not out by 4 o'clock, go to lunch without me. I said,
yeah, you'll be out. I swear. I swear. Okay, let's clip through them. Okay, so earlier this month, I just put myself full screen, so don't mind. You're still there, kids. Okay, earlier this month, Biden announced lifting the mask mandate for outdoor activity. The CDC revealed that being outdoors without a mask is safe, but even if you are vaccinated, you still have to wear, you're asked to wear a mask in public places, on planes, in stores, in restaurants. So my question to everybody, how how ready are you to resume life as normal? Frank.
I'm ready. We took it very, very seriously. I spent a year and a half, and honestly, from March 13th of 2020 until just recently, I was in the apartment, and the only thing I did in public was go for groceries. And I did it double masked, you know, and I was very serious about it.
Were you wiping down groceries?
No. There's only so much I'll, you know, I was like, well, if I die of an unwiped box of Life cereal, then that would just be funny. But so I didn't do that. But I took it very seriously, and I streamed things. I looked at it as early retirement, even though I can't afford it. But, you know, I was like, well, this is what it must be like when you have time to stream all of Downton Abbey in a week and a half, which we did. You know, it was like, I was like six seasons in the movie, and I was like, just keep watching it, you know. But, now I'm ready. I mean, we're starting to eat in restaurants again, although I want to sit outside still. But we're lucky in L.A. that we can do that. Well, New York can still, you know, everybody can for a while now. But, you know, so there's that. But, it feels good. But the thing that the people who refuse to get vaccinated, I want to kick them real hard in a soft spot. I do. I just, how dare you? It's like, you know, this is, have you no sense of we're all in this together? It's, you know, right. So I get very pissy about that. But because it's just, and India is dying, and you're going, you know, maybe if you give me free French fries, I'll get a vaccine. You know, F you. You know, it like, makes me furious. So, that was Italian. Daniel knows what that means. It's
like, yeah. Oh, we all know. Daniel, so speaking of Daniel, I went down to Florida during the pandemic, and so I was seeing that people, even at the peak of the pandemic, were not wearing masks. They were taking it really blasé-ly. So how are you feeling about getting back into the real world?
For the first year, I was in Los Angeles, and I took it, like, so serious. Everything was locked up, and, you know, I was a grocery wiper. I would order in and wipe everything down, and I was just over, because who knew what it was, you know? As we got, like, more information, and, like, when I came to Florida to help my mom, I realized that people were a lot more lax here, but they were also, like, outside and, like, on a boat and, like, things like that. Like, it wasn't, like, I didn't feel like a lot of pressure. You know, all those stores, people still had masks and stuff that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, like, I guess I felt like the transition is a lot less of a shock for me because I was spending a lot of it just with my core people and my family by our pool and, you know, spending it, like, out on boats and, like, going to the beach and doing things like that in Florida that felt safe, you know? So now it's, like, the transition's a little weird. I did go to get my nails done yesterday, and
I want a pedi so bad.
I actually am Super Mario.
Like, let me say,
it's so good.
Oh, look at that. Oh, it's fabulous.
You better go off.
Oh, the princesses and the castles and the thing. But, like, anyway,
I love you.
When I was there, they were like, your mask is optional. And every person had their mask on, so I optioned to.
Oh, good.
I also still had the two dividers, and then they have a divider between you and the person. And I was like, I feel really safe. I think it's like one of those things that now it's a common sense place that we're at right now. Like use your common sense. Like, use a mask if you feel like you might be in a place where you might need it, you know? Like, I feel like if I go to a theater, if when theater reopens and Broadway reopens, I will wear my mask until I sit down, and then I would take it off if there wasn't a mask mandate, you know?
Right.
Like, when they open it up, and that whole busyness of being in a crowd and, like, getting to the destination, I probably will never not wear a mask now. Like, getting ready to get on a plane, walking into a sporting event, walking into, like, a big concert, I'm always going to probably... First of all, I loved not being able to be recognized. I mean, although... I do feel like my silhouette still gives me away. It's like, I had that conversation once with Gabby Sidibe. I was like, if you put us on, like, who is it? And they show her shadow, like, there's five people you can mess with. Like, it's like, you're going to be like, so it's like, it's hard to, I'm not a blender. I don't blend.
No.
So we'll see what happens. But, like, I do like the idea, like, of like a little bit of privacy and not people, like, breathing on me when I don't want to be breathed on. Yeah.
Johnny, Daniel just mentioned theaters. So theaters are planning on opening up in September to full capacity. So how comfortable are you going to be about going to, say, a Broadway show?
Oh, I will be there the first day. just because, like, well, I got to be real with you. I'm a little reckless with myself. I want to say I'm so proud of New York because we really shut down in March 2020. And all the issues in the country with people, like, not wanting to wear masks, not before we really had all the information, everyone in New York always wore a mask on the train. And if there's that one piece of shit that didn't want to, we just all together. But, like, also, now it's – there's no – the mask mandate is, like, taken off. But, like, we keep it visible. It's like if you're outside, you don't need a mask. We're chilling. You're vaccinated. I'm vaccinated. I'm 2 weeks out. Like, you have it visible. It makes people feel comfortable. And when you go into the store, like Daniel said, you put it on. Just it's kind of like a respect thing almost. But when the theaters go back, I don't know how it's going to go. I know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I got my vax. I miss my church. And the theater has always been my church. That's how I feel about it. I think my first one's going to be Carolina Change because I cannot wait. I had my tickets for the first preview on my birthday, March 15th, and the girl shut it down on March 14th. I was devastated. I was ready to die for this. I was ready to die to see Miss Sharon D. Clarke from London. Come on.
Oh, I love my Sharon D. Clarke.
The girls don't know her, but they were about to find out.
Oh, I do.
But you know what? I'm glad because my other sis, Adrienne Warren, is going to clean house and fully deserves Tina. Her Tony. Adrienne, if
the Tonys are finally going to air. Last year's Tonys are coming out this coming September.
Two hours
on CBS and 2 hours on Paramount Plus. I don't know. It all seems a little ridiculous. But now they're talking about dance clubs are reopening and that employees are going to have to wear masks, but customers are going to be on an honor system. Anybody by hands who would go to a dance club? Because I will say I would.
I think I'd wear a mask. I really want to dance. I don't know what to do.
I want to go so bad. Like, that's like all I need right now is just a slightly inebriated dance. Like, that's just like that's like what my body needs. But I can't do it yet.
Daniel, 2 weeks2 weeks ago on Saturday, I was at Manor. I have to tell you, and it was packed, and I couldn't go on the dance floor. I didn't feel comfortable. Nope. I was at a private party, but I wouldn't.
That bar has been one of those like super special places. I mean, I'm not trying to like claim what space is, but that bar never really. I was afraid to go there this whole time. I really want to like just try to stay outside. By the way, I always loved the outside spot. I used to be a smoker. I always loved the back patios. I don't smoke anymore, but I still smoke.
Good for you.
I love to be like in the back corner, like, you know what I mean? Like chilling in this, just outside. Give me an outdoor patio. My favorite spaces always have outdoor spaces. So I think I'll still be rocking it there for a while. But trust me, I'm waiting for a sweaty, slutty disco one night. I need it.
Well, Frank, I mean, people are doing shows again. Would you be comfortable doing a show? I mean, they're doing shows in Provincetown this summer. It's all open.
Yeah, I would go to Provincetown this summer if I didn't have to get on a plane for it. You know, I don't feel like flying right yet. But
I've been flying. I just did Phoenix.
Yeah, I was just going to say, who's flown? Yeah, so Daniel has flown, Frank.
The shows aren't that bad, I feel like, because I feel like on stage we're safe. There's something about that feels safe. Like, I don't think I would catch a cold from somebody in the audience. Like, you know, like, doesn't feel like it's already 6 feet up in a way. Like, I mean, I've done the Miami Improv and I just did CB Live. I feel like I can, like, doing stand-up again feels so good, Frank.
If somebody wants me to perform, please, if they're asking for me, I just mean for funsies. You know, I'm not going to go for fun. Yeah. But we are going to Hawaii it's our 25th anniversary in August. So we're
congratulations.
Go
so, when are you going? When are you going?
We're going in August. So that'll be
all right. So August, you know, again, we have a couple months till then.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. But I was going to say, I don't miss disco. Going to a dance club wasn't what I missed during the quarantine, but I would see things like Downton Abbey, and I looked at Jim and I said, they're giving them champagne on trays. Remember champagne on silver trays? You go to a party and the first thing you saw was someone handing you champagne. I said, I miss that. So yeah, I miss parties where you could be a schnorrer and get free, expensive.
Free everything.
Everything, yeah. I do love a good... We went to a Dom Perignon party once that the company threw. And it's like, You could get used to that. I'll tell you. It's just, you just sit there. Yeah. I didn't even have a headache. We went back into the radio show. I was like, that's it. You know, I was drunk off my ass the week. You know, we went to McDonald's on the way. That was the best thing.
I had a good.
What, Daniel?
Dom Perignon and a big Mac is my life.
I haven't had a good gift bag since 2008. Like, I don't know when you're remembering. Like, and I was getting, after that, it was moisturizer. I was like, how much moisturizer do I need? Like, there was nothing, but there's nothing left for us after that.
No, that's true.
I told Lisa Lampanelli, I said, Lisa, a year from now, when I run out of little hotel soaps, we'll have to go back on the road. Okay.
And yeah.
Can I tell you something? No. Can I tell you something that's awesome? Yeah. If you save those queer, if you save those little hotel soaps, you can donate them to the LGBT center.
Can I give them conditioner? Because they take them for nothing to do with it. Do they need to do gays?
Yeah, give it to them. They give it to the homeless LGBTQ youth. Like, you know, they give them little care packets of like soap and the shampoo. And
I have real good. That's
a good idea. I always try to save them on tour. Yeah.
Oh, see, I don't do that. All right, I should do that. All right, I should do that.
I'm doing it too.
All right. So the Olympics are supposed to begin in Tokyo at the end of July. Now, some people are claiming it's going to be a super spreader for a COVID variant. People are calling for the games to be canceled or moved, which you can't do. It's a logistic nightmare and cost billions of dollars. But it would also rob athletes who've been training to be at peak condition for one weekend of their month. So what do you think? Should the Olympics be happening? I'm going to start with Johnny.
Oh, fuck. I don't know.
Sorry,
I
mean, Johnny.
My instinct was like, absolutely have them, have the athletes do it. We don't need an audience. Just film it. But, you know,
well, that's possible.
It's a business. And there's, like you said, billions of dollars. Things need to keep going. And also, like, whatever city the Olympics is, it's like decimated afterwards, right? Like, it just ruins every city. But, like, you can't take that away from them, right? And you want these. This is something that the world, it's not just like a country, you know, the world kind of does this. It's like a togetherness for the world. I just,
on the other hand, it could spread it to the whole world, I guess.
I people are really getting up. I don't know. I don't have the answers about whether, you know, vaccines should be mandated or whatever. Like, I don't want to tell anybody, but I know that I couldn't go to certain schools or like public, like certain schools. I had to have the hepatitis, I had to have polio, I had to have all this shit. Nobody batted an eye. You know, they weren't putting chips in us back then, but now, you know, they're gonna chip us. And my question
they're
is always
not
like
chipping
what
you.
Are you doing? What are you doing in your life that I need to find this bitch. I'm putting a
that's
chip
so
in
interesting that then we want to chip her, right?
Like my mother, I'm like, mom, what espionage are you doing that the government needs to follow you? And I'm like, mommy,
I have a friend who will not use her phone number at CVS because she doesn't want them to track how often she buys toilet paper. I said, are you that interesting? Really?
Well,
Frank, what do you think about the Olympics, Frank? I know that you don't care, but do you think they should happen?
The only Olympic thing I care about is Gus Kenworthy in The Bachelor. I don't really care. That's my idea of the Olympics.
Oh.
I know. I think if you're vaccinated and everyone else is, then you can go and not worry too much about it. I hope there is not a variant that we all have to worry about, but they don't know, and neither do we. But I do. No, I don't. That's one I don't give a lot of thought to. I just like, oh, it's good. I don't. It's in Tokyo. Where are they having? I don't.
Yeah,
know.
It's in Tokyo.
The Super Bowl is on. The only way I know the Super Bowl is on is you can get a reservation in a really good restaurant. You can't figure out why. Oh,
there you go. What does it matter to me if somebody in Japan gets a cold? Really, I don't care. Daniel, what about you? What do you care, Daniel?
Not very much. I think cancel all sports. No, I think I would like to see the Olympics be gender neutral. How about that topic? Like, I know some girl snowboarders, some guy snowboarders. Like, why does all of this stuff, like, when it comes to gender politics in sports, it's so dumb. I think sports should be by weight class and by whatever anybody else wants to do. I think there could be all male and all female teams, but I think that general sports should be genderless.
Okay.
Here, I second that.
I All right. Johnny knows this was a little contentious conversation in our last panel. We've talked about actors and gay roles. Now, there are people like Johnny who feel that only gay actors should play gay roles. Not, I shouldn't say, I'm not saying it blanketly, but you're very right. in favor saying, of that.
My thing is, I think that I just think that the scale needs to tip a little bit. I'm not saying
right,
only
and I agree with
that.
You. And right,
but I'm saying, like, and, you know, it was a bummer. It's a bummer when like we get like when Hamlet is written in Angels in America and it's called Prior. Why do queer people never get to cut their teeth on that? I've only seen one queer person who's out play it, and it was magnificent. But every person right. who wins or does is a cis man who's heterosexual, and like, I that just. If we're making the space now for other people, and now we're saying, you know, these people get to play these parts, and this person gets to play that part, why are we kind of excluded from that? I don't know. I don't have the answer. And Bruce Valanche really laid into me, but like,
well, okay, so it came up again this week because Netflix Halston series was criticized, right. even though many of the producers and casting people are gay. People were criticized that Ewan McGregor was cast as Halston, although not his first time playing a gay role. Let's just make that clear.
Ewan McGregor is a consummate artist and is impeccable in everything that he does. So I'm going to sign off on that one.
There you go. So should the best actor get... So, Dan, let me ask Daniel. Daniel, should the best actor get the part, or do you think that it should be based on some sort of personal experience?
It's a complicated multi-level answer that we have to unpack a lot of it. But I really think that at the main essence, the answer is yes. Okay. However, I do think not now. Do you know what I'm saying? Okay. Like, this is not a time for that. Like, we need to make some room right now, and we need to make some space right now, especially when telling queer stories and our queer legacy. Like, you know, we lost a generation of queer folk, and we need to be able to make up for that with stories. And when there's so many of our own that are unemployed, I don't really want to see... I'm sorry, I love her so much, but, like, we don't need to see Deborah Cox at Pride. Like, let's see a queer person. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like... that's not just her. I freaking love Deborah Cox, by the way. I would love to see it. But my point is, like, we need to start employing our own people and making our own people tell our own stories. I
agree.
You know, I'm starting to unravel a lot of this stuff. I've been getting very upset about, like, you know, the James Corden of it all and all these other things that have been happening in media.
Just bad.
Well, I thought he was really good in that.
He's fantastic. He's fantastic, Frank. But when does the guy... Like, you get a shot at that role, or a guy like me.
Yes, no, I'm with you. It's very thorny because it's like, did Ewan McGregor get people who wouldn't have watched a story about, as someone said, wouldn't watch a power bottom biopic, or, you know,
here's the thing, sell overseas. Like, I was directing, right before COVID, I was directing my first feature, and it was going to be all queer actors casting queer roles. But, you know, it was a death of COVID. Like, and maybe we'll resurrect it again. But one of the problems that I was encountering with my casting was that none of our leads could sell movies overseas unless they were straight. They won't do it. Like, it's more...
Well, is it that they're not straight? But is it that they're not straight or that they're not names? Because I wonder if Halston
the roles, it's both. Well, a gay person cannot be. They don't get the roles. Now here's my perfect example. Okay, and this is something you're gonna get me all mad again. But like, I was really upset when I was told that Elton John was gonna be able to pick who he wanted to play himself in the biopic of his movie, and I got like so excited because I was like, here's a definite. Elton John's biopic is going to be 100% a prestige film that Oscars are at least going to look at. This is an opportunity for a new artist, a new young queer person that Elton John hand selects to give the Jennifer Lopez Selena treatment to and make a star. But instead, he went with an already established straight star who wasn't actually really green lighting.
Not really a star.
Yeah, my mom's not really going to see it because he's in it, you know, and not that this. Respect anyone's performance or anything, but then I also found out this was the same day when we were talking earlier about the Vatican not accepting same-sex marriages that Elton John tweeted that day that the Vatican was one of the producers of Elton John's movie and made millions off of it, and maybe that's why a straight person was cast. And maybe that's why should the Vatican, who doesn't even approve same-sex marriages, be making money or produce? I'd rather make that money for $2 million with an unknown, if I was Elton John, than make it for $200 million with the Vatican. And unless you're making a bridge, you're burning one. And to me, it's just like, at some point, if I don't shut up, I'm never going to get hired again because the trailblazers get the arrows and not the land. But I don't give a fuck. Some other factor got the job after me. It doesn't have to be me. It just has to happen. And honestly, I sit back and watch it all day. I watch people get my jobs all day that are straight and roll my eyes into the back of my fucking forehead. And people who I really admire who are real trailblazers like Ryan Murphy never are hiring fat queer people unless they're a Joker woman. They're not doing anything for, they're only hiring guys with abs and all of their shit, all of our queer filmmakers, you know? And I'm I'm waiting to see people that are different, that are differently abled, people that are, handicapped, people who are different bodies, people that look like our world looks. And it doesn't always have to be the lead. It can start as easy as making the hotel manager a trans person because trans people are hotel managers. But everything is always cookie cutter and how it seems. They have to give this shit. They don't want to have an article written about why was the hotel manager looking like a non-binary person. That was weird. It doesn't explain anything. And then having that whole conversation, thinking that it's focusing on distracting because there's not enough of it. And, I really respect Kate Blanchett. And she made some sort of comment about I'm an amazing actor and no one's going to tell me what I can or cannot play or whatever. And I agree. I will watch anything Kate Blanchett's in, which is why some of these people are actually lifting up our abilities to tell these stories, how the story wouldn't have gotten told if Ewan McGregor wasn't the lead. And maybe that's part of what we have to accept now in this day and age. But when you are in a position of power, as much as I love him again, I really do love the guy personally and professionally, but it's kind of maybe we didn't even care in culture. And maybe that could have been a young queer person, but Ryan Murphy employs tons of queer people and people of color. His crew is mostly women, people of color. I think he's really a leader in that kind of thing, so he deserves his flowers as far as that goes. I can't criticize everything. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But if I'm speaking to anybody who's going to make something new, consider the fact that visibility matters, and consider the fact that we're unemployed too. After Mean Girls, I went several years struggling to pay my rent because offerings. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's there's nothing being broke famous and shit. And I'm telling you, there is no foundation to make sure that I have food on my table. There were certain things I could reach out to, I did at certain times. Actors Fund is an amazing organization, other places like that. But then I'm sitting there watching myself, not even as an adult man, who's had a lead on the HBO series, a lead on the ABC series, Freeform series, not even getting a chance to audition for the James Corden role. I kind of get a little bit what do I do? When Brandon Fraser is now going to be doing that play Heavy right now, and he's doing that, the movie he's doing of the play, and he's playing a 500-pound gay man. You want to talk about the fat queer experience? I know it. And Darren Aronofsky is hiring Brandon Fraser to come get his Oscar for playing another queer person. He's going to get a thin, straight man known as a heartthrob to come and who's gained a little weight to now come and all of a sudden break all of our hearts as a 500-pound, fat-wearing, queer man.
Let me ask Frank. Frank, we talked about this after the Oscars, and we talked about how a woman had won Best Director, and that people really, if they want their visibility, they can't wait for somebody to invite them. They have to create their projects. They have to make their own opportunities, which comedians have done for years. We write, we produce, we act in our own things. So do you think it's a situation that if you want acceptance, make the place for yourself that you want to see yourself
I think
in?
You have to do that out of necessity, but I really wish it weren't that. I wish that the situation were James Corden hosts a terrific late night talk show and Brooks Ashmanskas gets to play that character every time they do it. And I get to go do something. I wish all of us got to do the one, one thing before one person got to do 20 things. That's a little bit more my complaint with the way things run is that there is not. Somebody said, oh, good, things are opening up again. the same 14 people will work. And that made me laugh. It's really true. It really is. Like, you turn on the TV and the same person who's on a reality show is on a game show, is the co-host on a talk show, is right. in the new musical on Netflix. And you're like, wait a minute. It's like, that's four different people could do those jobs.
Right.
And
of course.
It probably would be cheaper, and we'd be a little bit less tired. You know, I love the girl who's on I don't want to see the Geico Gecko doing a musical. You know, he's very good
at the Gecko. Stay in your lane, Gecko.
Don't now have a talk show. How about that? You know, I do think spreading around the opportunity would be a much preferable to having to create your own space. I think you create your own space out of necessity. And if you were welcome to the table freely, you wouldn't have to do that. You know,
right. Agreed.
You know?
Yeah. And I think Daniel's point of people who don't fit whatever people's conventional idea of a leading man, this age, this body type, this color, these limbs, whatever. If people thought outside the box, they might discover some amazing talents that aren't the obvious choice. So I think that there is something to be said for that.
Yeah. I have a list. I think it would be because, like, here's Andrew Reynolds in the same show playing a straight man, you know? And he's like a very out right. man. So it's like kind of like if you level the playing field a little bit, then like maybe that's maybe a little bit more of a fair shake. You know, it was less.
Yeah,
but
think.
I am tired of which I know, Johnny, I could sense it from you that we're in alignment like this, but that like I'm tired of like all of my love stories being told by two straight leads and all of my heroes being played by straight men. Like Sean Penn was an amazing Harvey Milk. Like, you know, like these people are great, but like could we have some of our
well, what you said,
star, Elton John.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You said
career
something really.
Star, and that person could have been the first gay person to win an Oscar, and it could have been telling your story. Like, what a missed opportunity.
First out gay person, right? But I would say that some. Hey, let's call it like we see it. We've all seen the documentary.
Yep. No, you're right, Johnny.
There's no gay person who's ever won one being out before they had the Oscar.
Right.
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 And so, but I was going to say, you kind of led to something, and it's like chicken or the egg. It's like, I'm not saying it needs to be all or nothing. This is not a Cher song, but I'm saying the scale needs to tip. And chicken or the egg, if you don't give opportunities to people, we can't make stars, and then we can't actually participate in that, you know, gladiator arena with everybody because we're at a kind of a disadvantage.
A disadvantage, sure.
Somebody said something to me about like the best person gets the job or whatever, but my thing is like, it almost seems as like people or the audience or the people with the money decided that we want to see someone transform. So they want to see skinny, straight, white guy turn into big gay person because that's acting, right? But you're almost saying that almost means to say like if you're gay, then you can't actually be a good actor. And I'm like, we are chameleons and we're just as Meryl Streep, but we aren't really given the opportunity to show those colors. We're not really getting so. With
I tell you what, I definitely had to play straight longer than James Corden had to play gay.
Wow, well, that's probably true. That's absolutely true.
And how many times did you actually get into the final call, but because you weren't straight, you didn't get the part?
I'm never sure, but sometimes I think that is a factor. But you know, I was up for like Turtle and Entourage and all these like other parts that like I was right for when I was.
Oh young. Wow, you would have been so good as Turtle.
I was testing on those things, right? And then I got Mean Girls and I played a gay character and never again. Like, and then after that, all they ever gave me were gay roles, even trans roles and like non-binary roles just because I'm queer. Like I was more suited for those than for what I was normally really meant for.
Right.
And all right. Just, so last, let's wrap last topic because We're running long, and Frank's got lunch to get to.
I have lunch. I got to get my husband fed.
All right. So Kevin Spacey has just signed to a contract to make his first film in 4 years. L'Uomo che disegnò Dio, an Italian film, The Man Who Drew God, directed by Franco Nero. The original press release said it was going to co-star Franco Nero's wife, Vanessa Redgrave, who has since left the project. But the question remains, should Kevin Spacey be able to resume his career? Because despite numerous allegations, he has never been convicted of any crime. But it should also be noted his last film, Billionaire Boys Club, brought in $618 its opening weekend. That is not $618,000. That is $608. He brought in tens of dollars. So
my last meatloaf brought in $618.
Okay, so Frank, should just because he's a good actor, should he be allowed to resume his career? What do you think?
Oh, the poor old girl's got to do something with her life, doesn't she? I don't know. I mean, I really... I'm better at divorcing art from the artist. And
yeah,
maybe it's not so good that I can do that.
But would you go and buy a ticket?
Not fringe.
Right, maybe no, I can't.
Maybe I need to go. Maybe we don't need to hear this.
But would you go out and buy a ticket?
Do you erase for a Woody Allen movie? Yeah, I kind of want.
No, for Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey? Would I not watch something? I wouldn't. There's nothing I wouldn't watch just because someone was in it, if it was a good enough project.
Okay. I wouldn't have gone to see him just on his name before all of this. But would I still watch it?
A brilliant actor.
I don't want to take that away from him, even though I know things as we all do. Well, Johnny, what do you think? You're in the field.
I was going to say, Billy, you always come up with these like questions.
I'm sorry.
You're trying to get me like fucked by everybody. You know, like
I wanted to get you fucked, I'd give you Kevin Spacey's number.
Listen, it's interesting. It's a really interesting. This is an interesting topic, and I think that I've been thinking about this a lot because like the cancel culture is so real these days, right? And I've been thinking, well, what's the difference?
Oh yeah.
Like, what's the difference between like Wagner being like a Nazi supporter, right? And like
an anti-Semite,
like,
right?
An anti-Semite, and having, but also being kind of like
being Wagner. Right.
Bringing like a kind of thing to world class, you know, it's such an important, you can't get rid of him, right? But like,
exactly.
I think it's because since Wagner's dead, he's not really getting the flowers anymore, right? So like his family or his descendants are getting the money, but I think it might be even like free domain. I don't know. It's pre a certain time, so I don't know. He's not really making money anymore off of his operas, right?
Well, but does, all right. So say Kevin didn't even want any money, just wanted the opportunity to act.
Should he have that opportunity?
Why?
Well, I'm asking, should he have the opportunity? That's the question.
Why would he want to? What's his intention? Why does he want to act?
Maybe he loves acting and just doesn't want to sit home and jerk off to kiddie porn. I mean, I don't know. I'm not. That's not a good enough answer for me.
Then that's not a good enough answer for me. I feel like, you know, maybe donate 50% of your salary to the Trevor Project. Like, put your fucking money where your mouth is. Do some reparations that make me feel okay.
All right, so yeah, if he did that, if he did something like that, would you be then in favor?
It would be a start. All right. It would be a start. As long as you have victims that are out there, like, crying and, like, in pain, like, publicly, and, like that person should never be silenced or not listened to. I think, like if you admit to what you did, like, and that's something that, and these are the things you did, then show that you're changing. I want to see some therapy. I want to see you donate some money. Show some things. We haven't seen anything from you but a bullshit apology, in my opinion.
And
a press from being erased from a movie, and then now this movie all of a sudden he's showing up where he plays somebody that has something to do with some kind of like a child molestation storyline. Like, no, sis, sit down. Wrong idea. That's how I feel.
Well, I think Vanessa Redgrave was smart to pull out. Let's just say that. She didn't need this headache. But I have to say, I agree. Personally, I agree a little bit more with Frank that, like, I'm very able to watch something or listen to something and just judge it on its merit without thinking of the person in real life. Personally,
it's just, you know what
passing,
it is?
I think passing, you know, Michael Jackson is problematic. Like, I still love his past music. I really am, like, disgusted by the allegations against Woody Allen. I love his old movies. Will I watch a new one? I don't think so. It just so happens that...
Well, don't watch Rifkin's Rifkin's Holiday. Johnny and I talked about it. Don't watch Rifkin. Yeah, it's a waste of time.
Yeah, it's everything you brought up, though, has no black or white answer. Every question you've mentioned during this panel is a very thorny subject.
That's what I
really do. Really have to look at all the sides.
I know,
of,
Billy. Jeez. You know.
Well, you think I'm going to ask you softball questions? You're smart people, for God's sakes.
Thank you.
All right, this was fun. I just want to thank all of you. Daniel, in particular, it's your first time with us. Thank you for doing the show. It was so much fun.
Thank you.
Please come back and play with us again. I love you so much, Daniel. Oh, look at this. I got tonguing going on. I'm going to say goodbye to each of you individually. Daniel, thank you so much. I will be backstage after the show if anybody wants to talk to me. Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks,
Johnny Beauchamp, I adore you. I can't wait till I can get to New York and actually go out with you again. God, I miss seeing your face.
I can't wait. And Frank, you better fucking come. And we just have to have a night, man. I just want to say thank you. You always bring me out with the greatest guests, and I'm so
I adore you, Johnny. Thank you so much for always being there for me.
I'll
give it to you. Thank you, Johnny.
Daniel and I got to find each other. So.
And Frank, you know, you just never disappoint. I love talking to
you.
Thank you so much.
I was going to say to Daniel, if he's still listening.
Yeah, I think he is. He's backstage.
Your show is like the best date. It's really long, but it's not that painful. So it's good, you know? It's like a really good date. So it's... just get it. Once it's finished,
you know, you leave me speechless. Yeah. Oh, well, I know that. Frank, please, let's do some drag shows this summer. We'll get some people coming, and we'll have you back. And I want to do another Golden Girls show with me, you, and Jim, and Alaska.
She loves it. And Jim's new book is he did a book with Norman Lear. It's coming out.
I am so jealous that he sat down with Norman all that time. I'm so jealous. I can't even stand it.
We went to Norman's house.
I know.
It was so fun. Anyway.
And Norman's, what is it? His son-in-law is Dr. LaPook?
Something like that. I don't know.
Something. I don't know. But they're on Seth's show. Fuck them. Anyway, Frank, thank you for playing with us. I love talking to you. We'll talk again soon. Thank
it's
you
time
so
for
much.
Lunch.
All right, go eat. Don't eat too much. Bye, honey.
Lots of celery.
No, don't eat just celery. Thank you all for watching Billy Masters Live. I'm not sure who's here next week, so who knows? Just tune in. I will see you. Have a safe Memorial Day weekend. Wear your mask if you're not sure where the fuck people have been. And if you don't want to wear a mask, that's your business. I'm not going to bother you. Have a good weekend. And just remember, if we're here, we're live. Bye.